Today's the 4th of January, new year 2019, and I think this is number 53, Wayne, in my series of interviews over the years, and glad to get together with whatever connections you guys have and what your backgrounds are and that sort of thing. Would you take us into your early grade school year and your family at that time?
All right. I attended St. Patrick's Catholic School in Epworth back in the 50s. I went through the full 8 years. When I went to high school, as a freshman, moved into Western Dubuque. And I
what
had
year was that
would have been 1965, I think, is when we graduated in 1969. We're graduates, so I already had two sisters in Western Dubuque. As I said, my first oldest sister was the first class as a full 4 year as a freshman, so I was somewhat aware of what Western Dubuque was because I got to go to basketball games and things like that at the high school. So I guess then, again, attending Western Dubuque from 1965, I was fortunate. I guess at the time, West Dubuque at that time just pretty well had baseball, basketball. And really, at that time, there's no girls, women's sports. The first year when I was a freshman, Western Dubuque started wrestling. So I've got to know Tom Kilberg from day one, and I was on with wrestling and stayed with it for the 4 years. I wasn't the super wrestler, but I was part of it and helped him out quite a bit.
What weight did you wrestle at?
Pardon me?
What weight?
I probably started out at 127, I think my freshman year, and worked my way up probably by time as a junior was in the 160s, and senior was in that 180, 190, but I wasn't wrestling out. But Kilberg would always ask me, you know, what I did is I became a student manager, helped him out. I wrestled with the guys, but I never usually could stay long every night for practice because of the farm. And so, which I enjoyed my senior year, I could get out of my study halls, go down and prepare for wrestling meets.
And is that when they put the mat in the north area there?
We were pretty well at that time. I'm thinking that north area just opened when we left.
Yeah.
So we were pretty well wrestling either in the gym or up on this stage where we would roll the mats out. But then as a senior, then Kilberg would ask me, he'd be short a guy in the reserves or something. So sometimes I'd get stuck with heavyweight, which, you know, is go out there and do the best you could. But I enjoyed it. But I guess it was my last year. I was in a situation and I was out there trying to maintain weight. But I had good friends, classmates that were very good wrestlers. And
were some of your classmates that were wrestling at that time?
Yeah, well, Dan Steger. Dan would have been wrestling all 4 years of high school. He was one of these guys that lost a lot of weight. He really had tough times making weight because it was a matter of, like typical in wrestling, I can't beat the guy at this weight, so I have to drop another one. But the class year previous would have been the Dave March and Donnie March. And as you said, I even at the time, the freshman year, Tom Hancock, who was a senior, Kilberg talked him into going out for wrestling, and he wrestled heavyweight. So it was quite an experience. I know that many years of a lot of losses, but you know, Tom built team, and you know, we all can see what has happened since his start of the wrestling team in Western Dubuque.
When I was first started out at the high school, I was the athletic director, and back then one of my duties was to weigh in the wrestlers. And we had to always do this in the morning. And anyway, you know, you just brought up the point about cutting weight, and I go by the nurse's office during the day, and the guys, they'd be laying in there because they hadn't eaten for how long. Anyway, so then we'd, like it was a Saturday meet, we'd weigh in those kids in the morning with Kilberg there, and I'd have to certify it, and if they couldn't make it, why, he'd say, get on that rubber suit and go down to the boiler room.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they'd eventually all get weighed in. Well, then they go up to the restaurant and gorge themselves, whatever. That no longer exists. It's gone, which is good.
And it is. It was definitely a health, because I remember Dan many times in that rubber suit. He'd be sitting in a hot whirlpool with this suit trying to sweat off a couple pounds. And, you know, those were the days that somebody's lost so much that you could, they might qualify on a Thursday, but they couldn't hardly eat because on Saturday they had a tournament someplace. So it was definitely, like I said, those kids put a lot, the guys put a lot of effort, but it was definitely hard on the body when you watch some of them too.
Who were some of your teachers back then?
Well, I had Mr. Thurm. I had him for government, I think, in my senior year. Bernie Forkenbrock.
Yep.
Had him for English. I had Mrs. Hall. I can't even remember. You know, I guess those days, that's the way you called them. She had her for math for first year or two. I had Mike Coffey for history in my junior year. I had Dave DeLeary, who would have been my economics teacher. I'm just trying to think. You know, you went around. Helen Williams would have been my science teacher.
Sure.
Mr. Shields would have been my biology teacher, which I think most of us through those years, well, even my children had Mr. Shields at the end yet. So it was quite a turnaround. But, you know, Kilberg was just starting at that time. I had Steve Finley, I think, for one or two classes over my 4 years. So I guess, you know, it's probably, I didn't even think of that when you start thinking back of which ones are which. But, you know, they were a lot of young teachers coming in. There was a lot of ones that were up in years that were getting ready to retire. And I think we've watched that with West Dubuque now. There's a lot of those people, like I said, that were still in school or just retired when our oldest daughter started West Dubuque. Right. And so it was probably, after the school was filled, the turnover was probably slower because there was a lot of young people.
A lot of stability back through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Yeah.
And, you know, was the best part about it is because the district was so spread out, but it was the kids you met, but it was a matter, I think, everything. There were a lot of different ideas and thoughts, but it all melded into the Western Dubuque district. And it was... like my wife, you know, it was 30 miles that I drove to when I met her. I met her junior in high school when she transferred in from Cascade. But, you know, over the years, I says you didn't realize how far some of these kids rode. Even in my years after we got married and left high school, I drove. Joan was one of the few women bus drivers in the probably early 70s. I think there was only three or four of them. And so I would substitute drive, because I worked second shift. And I would get on this route at Frank Stager had, and it was down south of Bernard. You know, I left Epworth at 6 o'clock in the morning, and by the time you get a lot of these kids, and Joan was one in the southwest corner, that she says we were late more than we were on time because they had such a big route.
You know, back then there wasn't even any bus radios to communicate or...
No, and we all know back then you didn't cancel school like they do today. I mean... Even as we only live 3 miles from school, but we could get snowed in on this road for 4 days. If they could get the majority of the kids to school, our responsibility was when you got to school, you've made up your work and you continued. And, you know, I know things have changed, liabilities and all of this stuff, but it is. There's a lot of drivers put up with a lot of tough weather.
Yeah, well, I do remember, I think there were 70 some routes. In the like the 80s, late 70s and 80s, that's took a lot of drivers to get that all taken care of. Every
yeah, because I think I remember even Joan, one of her first routes was up around Petersburg. You know, as you said, it took you how long just to get to the route.
Oh, yeah.
But now today, and again, with the more schools, you know, you watch the buses. There's so much moving from town to town just to get the kids back and forth. So that adds to the routes too again.
Yeah. Well, how many were in your class, do you recall?
Around 133. I'm pretty sure we lost one or two pretty quick right after high school. This year, I guess, we're probably in January, start getting together here. It's our 50th class reunion this year. So it's kind of a, we haven't got together a lot. It was a matter of, for quite a few years, but it was the same group for the first 25 years. And it was kind of bad, but everybody just said, we've been doing this for 25 years, but nobody did step up to the plate. But I think a lot of them are looking forward to the 50th. We run into a lot of students or a lot of classmates, and they want to get involved this time. So
where's the time go?
Oh, I think, you know, like we all, these, all of us have said, how fast, you know, you look ahead on life, it seems like, oh, you know, we always said when you were 18, 20 years old, somebody that was 50 was old.
I know.
And today it's, now I'm looking at my children, you know, Lynn is in her high 40s already, you know, and I remember Joan telling her when she graduated from high school, she says, you're 50, your class, you're going to be here before you know it. Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, right.
Then it was, and now all of a sudden you got them in 25 and 30 years out of school.
Well, you know, it's interesting as far as reading or seeing reports on what's happening in our country at this point. There are so many senior citizens. They're having shortages for nurses, doctors.
Yes.
I just heard airline pilots. They don't have enough airline pilots.
Sheriffs, they were just talking
law
last night.
Law enforcement. You know, so that's a fact of life that... that generation from after World War II and into the 50s is now retired.
And I was just talking to someone who's just up at the farm this morning, and he works at a factory in Dubuque, and he said, we can't find help. He says, people don't, or if they do, they don't show up, they don't come on time. And, you know, and he says, I'm thinking of retiring in 5 years. He says, I've got, you know, another sideline. But he just said, I says, every business person you talk to, you know, when it's bad enough when you have small companies can't find, but when you've got large factories, good benefits, good wages, and they can't even find people to fill these shifts. And it is kind of scary. We don't, Western Dubuque, I think we've been very fortunate that because of Western Dubuque being in Epworth, and we've watched the growth. You know, the growth for Dubuque County has been the corridor of Highway 20.
Corridor is.
And we all know that generally when there's a, it's like when a school closes in town, that is the backbone, because the school draws people to that town. And so I said, I guess in this area, we've been very fortunate. There has been growth in West Dubuque, because I'm not sure how they've done the last few years, but it's been a continuous
gradual increase.
Increase.
My son-in-law, my daughter lives in Marion. He works for a landscaping firm in Marion, and they are to the point for the last 3 years, they have brought in Jamaican workers every year because they can't find people to do those jobs in the summer.
And, you know, it's like everything is, most of us, as you said, the baby boomer generation, a lot of us that either grew up on farms or had some type, you know, it wasn't, even if you lived in town, if you could find a job, you did. And, you know, everybody has kind of progressed from that into the real world. And everybody said the productivity, the people that have put dedication to their job, and we're not seeing that. And I think, like I often said, sometimes we have some people, you know, whether maybe my dad's the president of some company, but, you know, some of the dads have said, you will start at the bottom and find out what my employees go through. But some of them think, well, we should graduate from high school and start out as vice president, you know.
Right.
But the reality is that you still have to prove yourself, too.
Well, so, okay, you got out of West Dubuque. What was next for you?
I had an opportunity. I was looking at an opportunity to go to college. I looked at, I think when Dan Steger and I both went down, well, that's right, I was one of my teachers. It was Mr. Peterson. He wasn't at West Dubuque very long, but he was a shop teacher, taught drafting, and he really wanted us two to go on to school, at least. So, you know, I did go down to Maryville, Missouri, and look at the college. But I guess I was dating my, you know, my girlfriend, and, you know, I got out and I started first at Ertl's. You know, those days to start out less than $2 an hour, but what you bought cars for. You know, it was quite a difference, but I was only there. I went to the service, so I was in the National Guard, so I probably only worked at Ernest's the first 8 months, maybe two or three. Then when I came back, I applied in Dubuque, and I got hired at the Dubuque PAC. I worked there about 5 years, but I was not in the plant, and we were supplying all the materials, so we were in the old Milwaukee Roundhouse. It was a warehouse. Well, eventually they were started to close it, and we were seeing guys that had 30 years in, and the best they were doing is giving them a job with no seniority. So I kind of thought, well, okay, I have with 5 years, which I was driving truck at that time, and I enjoyed it, but I opted out. I went and got a job, worked for a carpenter, built houses for about 6-8 months. Then I got hired by the city of Dubuque. So I was in the maintenance department there. Well, I started on the street department, so I rode rubbish trucks. I drove truck. I shoveled snow. I did, you know, it was, you know, the labor. Finally, after a couple of years, I got a chance to bid into a job in the office. So I did paperwork, ordered parts, ran after parts. So it was keeping the maintenance department going. And then finally talked my dad into giving me a chance to come to the farm. And after a lot of years, he finally just decided to give us a chance. So we started farming in 1977.
So your family started by then?
We got married in 1970. So we were only out of school about a year or so. And we just decided, Dad says, like everything, well, you don't have much. And nobody did. Most everybody, we all know, didn't have much, but you worked and you put, you know, you just figured that's part of it. And so, by 77, well, we already had two daughters, and we lived in Epworth right near the West Dubuque School. We bought a house there, but then we moved to the farm, and I think that first year, Joan was expecting, and she was still driving school bus, and she quit January 1st, expecting she was going to be due in March. Well, on the 28th of January, we had been all snowed in for 4 days. We were playing cards the night before, talked about, well, it's a good thing it's not March. She went into labor and had to go through the field with the tractor, met my dad at the highway to get her to Dubuque. And that's the first, when we're in there, the doctor says, either something's wrong with the baby, we missed the due date, or there's two of them. And guess what? There was two of them. So that was quite the experience. So, but you know, Dad, you know, this was Dad moved up here in '52. I was a year old when we moved to the farm. So it's been like everything, a lot of tough years. But fortunately, you worked with your family. The kids got to grow up with each other. And you know, now again, I'm fortunate enough. After enough years, I figured the boys would make their own decision, and they opted into the farm. So right now we've got two sons farming with us, and the girls, like I said, close by. Jill, again, I said, married a farmer, which, you know, those, my two daughters, I thought were never going to have anything to do with a farm because after living on one. But so it's been an experience, but we've been part of this district, and you've seen the growth, and a lot of people have come and gone, but there's a lot of young, when you look at the teachers, our grandchildren now, we have 13 of them, well, 12 of them in Western Dubuque schools throughout Epworth and Farley. But when you talk to their teachers and just see the interest and how so many of them are so concerned, but how they take to the kids, and this is what is always been a good thing about the schools, that the teachers, the majority of them, are always more concerned about their children than they are themselves, and to make sure they excel.
They give themselves to the kids. Yeah.
And so, you know, then like I said, and our oldest one, again, is a freshman in Iowa, and it's this. Now you start looking to the next generation again. What are they going to do? Where are they going to end up? And what kind of jobs, as we just talked about? There's a lot of jobs out there, but it's finding something. And we all know, if you enjoy what you do, that's part of life, because life goes so fast, as we just said.
Well, you know, those years, when you were there, portables when you were at high school?
Yes.
You know, gradually, we kept on needing more and more portables, And, you know, we got into the 70s, the 80s. Tried some bond referendums, you know, just unsuccessful. And so my kids and a lot of other kids all had that experience of going through the portable experience and that sort of thing.
And it was at almost every school had some. I know West Dubuque had a lot of portables and, you know, had classes out there. And, you know, even some of the elementary, the 7th and 8th grade kids were down at Western Dubuque. But I think when I was, you're right, just getting a bond issue through. But when we left in 69, we graduated, and the next year, the first addition to West Dubuque was just going to open up. They added shops and some multipurpose rooms. But, you know, over the years of the bond issues, I know we got involved in on committees when they were trying to build, because you've seen the growth was there and the crowd, and you know, when we were almost putting kids in closets for classes, like they used to say. But and I even remember talking to many, but well, they don't need this. Don't I says you need to go up and, you know,
take a look,
because everybody all knew what we didn't need. But it's tough when you have to ask people. But most people, when they say they got an option to address taxes, they would much rather not. They won't vote for one, even though no matter how many good causes there are.
Right.
And that's why I said we've seen how many additions onto West Dubuque, and from what I'm understanding, is still again because of the growth, is overcrowded in the high schools. I know you guys have done the Piasta and the Farley, and even Dyersville, but I'm assuming like most of the time, by the time you get them done, they're already full before you even start.
Again, that corridor population just keeps on growing. And our, you know, our real salvation, obviously, was the local option sales tax, you know, in 2000.
Yes.
And Dubuque County got us over the top on that thing, obviously. But if you go now to the Epworth, for sure, it's amazing what they have for facilities and how great it is for the kids that go there now.
Yes. So. But look at today as the preparation for the kid, because when I was in high school, a small percentage of kids were going on to college or something. Today, I can't even imagine, but most of them either need a technical school or a college to get a job in the real world today. So if you can't prepare them in high school, because, and just like Paige has already said, and even people were my age said, if I'd have known when I went on to college, I'd have studied harder in high school. But Paige has said, even she's watching some kids, and she says it is, you know, quite a difference. She's, you know, she was a straight A student in Western Dubuque, but she said that I think her first semester she maintained somewhat in that B. But she says there's a lot of kids that I know that have come here that were, high school was easy and they didn't have to really study.
Yeah.
And now she says some of them are struggling because it's such a dramatic change.
Yeah.
And but as you said, it's the cost today. But you know, it is a shame that how much debt that these kids have to take on.
Oh man, my granddaughter, her post college debt is considerable.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, we've watched it. I remember years back, and Bill Schuler is a good friend of mine, and Bill was out here that one year. But Bill and I often talked about some years, someone who's willing to use their brains and their back will be paid more. Well, it's been a long time, but now today you're actually starting to see where, you know, people have worked 30 years in a plant and they're hiring new people, paying them more just to get them in the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, and employers are looking at how do they pass that on. But, you know, almost everybody is, you know, they could add shifts. They've got the work, but they can't find the personnel to continue working.
Well, Wayne, so at some point you got in the political arena? How did that come about?
Well, I guess in my years of farming back in the 80s, we had the farm crisis. And I got involved. I became an NFL member, and I listened to a lot of the older farmers, and they always talked about things that were projected, and it was falling into place. Well, like I said, representatives, I became more outspoken, and I guess I always felt I was somewhat speaking for the ones that wouldn't stand up. I actually was on, and you know, Mr. Donahue today on TV does not have the best record, but at that time, Phil Donahue had these talk shows, and he went around the nation, and he was at Ames. And I, Joan and I went to Ames, and I was got the talk. I just said to somebody the other day, I remember when I got there to that point, and they come up to me, and I says, I thought my heart was going to jump out of my chest, you know, it's public speaking, because in high school, I thought, what would I ever need speech class? Why would I ever need any of this? And but anyway, it continued on, and you know, I ran for West Dubuque for the school board once, and I, you know, wasn't successful, but by that time, then my sons were out of high school, and I didn't know if I had the time, so I kind of backed away from that. But so I often thought if I wanted to do something, maybe someday I'd like to just be a county supervisor, you know, in the area. You're affecting your local people and try to speak for them. And so I think I ran the first time in 98, and took me three attempts, because I was known in the somewhat in the county because of my advocacy, of at least they knew who I was.
Yeah.
But it was tough because a lot of people in Dubuque didn't know me. But fortunately, third time was a charm. I ended up, but you had to win a primary in Dubuque County because you could, if it's a Democrat, you can't even get to the election. But it was, I was glad to get elected. I have been very thankful to the people who put their trust in me. Hopefully I did a good enough job. But I was supervisor for 12 years. And, you know, people, again, like everybody, they want you to run again. And I just said to them, I says, you know, John and I talked about it. And I says, the first 4 years you're learning. The second 4 years you're starting to move forward and, you know, and at least moving. But we both, I said, 12 years, there's other people can get involved and you need other minds. Sometimes I think that's what turns me off so much on politics today is we have some people think that they can't be replaced, you know, and to me is you got to give people chances. And fortunately, voters in Dubuque County gave me a chance. And, you know, I had some other people wanted me, oh, run for the state house. And I go, no. I enjoy the supervisor, which, you know, I'm still farming. And then Russ, after I got had gotten in, Russ was working at Bodine. And, you know, Ryan was, working for local contractors and stuff. But and all of a sudden one day Ryan said, well, Russ is going to quit his job at Bodine. I says, you know, I think we need to have this discussion. But fortunately, because of the amount of meetings, you know, I could be at the first, even when I was running, I would plant corn to 4 a.m, do chores, and then go to some place I was supposed to be to talk to people. And even my wife says, you know, you can't continue to do this. And so it Russ actually then he quit his job and came on to the farm, and at least part of it. And so it helped. But, you know, my last years, I mean, I probably average 3 to 5 meetings a week. And I don't think anybody realizes sometimes, but it, to me, is if you want to be good at what you do, you got to put the time in. And right. That's what, you know, even like I was saying, I was thinking of running for school board, but then I knew my time wasn't there, and I thought, you know, I can't be any good for the taxpayers of Dubuque County and for the district if I'm not aware of what's going on, just go to a meeting.
So
I got into politics. I guess I never liked the thought of being called a politician. Like I told most people, I get up like you do every day, and I put my pants on one leg at a time. So, yeah. But that's the best part about being the county supervisor. One minute I could be in a meeting with CEOs and bankers and business people, and an hour later I could be dealing with the poorest of the poor. So you tried to keep your thing in line to say, it's not about this, it's about everything. And I tried to perceive that for 12 years that, you know, it's not me, because I was fortunate that people gave me a chance. And sometimes politics, people forget what they think about power and what they're doing, but they're doing it for the people, and I think that's what they need to do.
Now, Dubuque County has three supervisors. I noticed that, which county?
Lynn
just went to three. What's your feeling on that?
Well, at the time, because that was discussion when I first ran, Dubuque County should go to five supervisors. after I got in, and I think what part of the problem was, there was some people had issues about some supervisors were there for a long time. And I think they felt the only way they could get any kind of a change in county government would be to have five, which could maybe outvote, you know, someone. But as things changed after I got in, within a few years, there was some major changes in people. And I was fortunate enough over those years that we didn't ask about party. We didn't, that wasn't an issue for us. It was, what is an issue? You got an issue, and I think it's justifiable. Let's look at it. And I think we started to govern as a group and not as, again, party politics. And so I felt that, I think, and at that time, I mean, we had great representation. We had a supervisor from Southern Dubuque County. I was in the middle, and the other one was in the northern side. So I said, probably the best representation. And as all of us, we still needed the city to get elected. So you had to represent the whole area. But as you said, I think the best, the part of just trying to work together, because we all knew that it was not going to be our issue. I know I watched in politics in Dubuque County previous to getting in was, you know, and we all know that roads, especially in rural Dubuque County, but for almost 28 years, we did nothing but fix new roads, but we never went back to maintain them. Well, when I was in there, they were literally falling apart. We had issues with our engineer that we weren't getting anything done. But at the same time, you tried to explain to people that the policy should have been, you fix, you maintain, then if you have more money. So that was probably the biggest topic that I've dealt with all the time. Okay. But, you know, many people would call me and complain, and I'd say, okay, fine, but do me a favor, drive this road, and then call me back. And usually they didn't, because they, I think the saying was, the worst road in Dubuque County is the one that runs past your door, you know. So, yeah. But it was an experience of dealing with so many things. I mean, things that I found out that, you know, living on the farm you didn't know, and so many good people that you met, you know, business people. And there's so many things in Dubuque County. Yeah. You know, I would go to ribbon cuttings with the chamber, going, geez, I didn't know that was here, and I've lived in Dubuque County my whole life. So, but it was a good experience.
Yeah. Well, that's. It's an eye-opener, I'm sure, as far as all the things that you have to deal with and trying to keep people happy and
I remember it's been probably from Farley, but Bob Hafer, I knew Bob and I knew his brother, but he said to me the first time I got elected, and he says, well, Wayne, you're at your peak. I says, what do you mean I'm at my peak? I said, you know, you were hoping you could keep more. He says, if you can keep 51% of the people happy, you're doing a good job. And, you know, it is very true. But, you know, we've got, you know, you get issues. And I says, I guess people say, well, what are you going to promise me? I says, nothing. Just try to do the best job I can. Because, you know, that's part of, you know, if you start doing that before you know it, you're in the job to fill promises and keeping people happy. But, and it was tough. There's some years that, you know, tightening budgets. We froze wages because of issues. But, you know, people would come to me and said, you know, Wayne, I'm working in Dubuque here and I haven't had a raise in 3 years. You know, and that is part. So you're dealing with the employees that you represent, but you're also dealing with people out here that are paying these taxes. And so you tried to keep this factor that, you know, there's people out here can't afford taxes and you guys want, you know, full benefits or you want this and that. And I think that listening to people, and they said even probably the school districts, you know, years ago, wages was an issue, but benefits, you know, oh yeah, we could give you some health insurance. It wasn't that big of a factor, but now it's totally flip-flopped that the benefits to a job are as much as the wage.
Right, yeah. Give me a little perspective on your farming operation. As far as you got started back in the 70s? And
it started, yeah.
Went through the farm crisis, I know.
Right. I stayed with Dad. When I got out of high school, I worked 5 years a second shift. So I would always be at the farm helping. You know, those are the days you got eggs and a few things, but I enjoyed being out there. Well, then when we, you know, came into the farm, we had hogs, we were farrowing our pigs, and we had cattle. Well, we just had some cattle, not very many, but then over the years we've projected, you know, Joan was very much involved. She didn't work in town. She was always taking care of the farrowing house, and we did a lot of cleaning and stuff. But it's kind of proceeded, and we've stayed in livestock. And now this last year, which we're probably here on the home farm, well, the boys ended up each buying a farm that we've rented for almost 25 to 30 years. But, you know, we have about 2,800 head of hogs on the farm, and we feed about 600 head of cattle. And that's a daily chore. But it's what keeps you busy, not saying it's always profitable, but even back in the 80s, well, in 98, when we had 8-cent hogs, that year we worked just as hard as we did every day. And I have explained this to people, and I says, we borrowed $50,000 just to pay bills. And I was talking to someone who I knew that worked at John Deere, and he says, well, explain this to me. He was kind of lost in what was going on. And I says, well, to put the shoe on the other foot, it's like you working for John Deere, and every week you write him a check for $1,000 for the privilege of working for him. He goes, oh. I says, but that was somewhat of the perspective. But, you know, you have the good years, but sometimes, you know, the last few years have been good for agriculture. But when you look at, like, anything, the cost of operation, the dollars you tie up, man. And a bad year doesn't take long to pull anybody down.
Yeah. So you had how many acres?
Right now with the boys and what we rent, we run about 800 acres. You know, we got the home farm. And as I said, you know, John and I basically farmed one whole generation renting the ground. But fortunately, the one opted just finally this year decided to sell, and it was right across the road, which I said we were kind of tied up. We couldn't expand anymore. And then the other one, she was like 93 and very, you know, she lived in her own house to almost the day she died. But I go in and talk with her, and I often said to my wife, I said, she knows more about agriculture than a lot of men do. I mean, she was very good. But so when she died, she gave us an opportunity to try to buy that farm. And, you know, that's what she wanted. She always said, if I can help out young farmers. And so it is, but it's a big debt load for them now. You know, they're back into this thing, and I guess like everything is, I didn't want to buy it at this age, but it's part of theirs too.
I was a history major in college, and so I'm always kind of looking back at things that interest me. And I saw something on the Cedar Rapids Gazette this fall that had a memory of the past, and there was an event in 1958. Just outside of Cedar Rapids, they had the National Corn Picking Contest. Okay. The reason it was so publicized was that both President Eisenhower and JFK attended. And the thing that caught my eye was the fact that it said, the article went on, and then it said, also there was a demonstration on the use of 1- and 2-row corn pickers. And anyway, because I grew up with a 1-row corn picker with my parents.
Yeah.
Well, things have changed.
Well, you know, and we've often, even like when my grandmother died, she was 94. You know, we often talk, she came into the world before airplanes, before, and, you know, by that time we were a man on the moon. And now, as you said, you step to our parents' generation or what they have seen.
Yeah.
And it is. It's hard to contemplate. But look at today with technology. You and my, at our age, you just, it changes every daily almost. And yeah. I'm kind of glad, I think, that I'm at the generation I was. I think we said that, you know, we probably have grown up in one of the best generations because we grew up with family. You know, our parents had seen the depressions and things like that. But today, you know, everything's open on Sundays. You know, and these are all things that most of us grew up with. Sunday was a family day. You know, I don't know about you, but most everybody, you went to see relatives and friends, and you spent that. But now, today, with the fast-moving pace, but, you know, we often say is, how are our grandchildren today going to be affected by this technology? Because it's everything is at their fingertips. Is it going to, you know, can it get worse? I don't know.
Well, I have a vivid memory of going to, this is in the mid-60s, going to Dyersville, and there was a state liquor store that you had to go into, and you had a booklet.
Yes.
And you had to, if you wanted a bottle of whiskey, That's how you got it. My God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and I think that, you know, I often said that most of our children and our grandchildren look at, you know, they said where mom and dad are, like they've talked about. A lot of the kids want to start where mom and dad have worked 30 to 40 years to get to. And that is part of this today. And I often said what we needed when we were younger, we couldn't afford. And when we got older, we didn't need it, you know. But as you said, it's just that concept.
But, yeah.
But yeah, it's been interesting. But like I said, most of us, you know, it went down. You borrowed if you didn't have money, if mom did. But it wasn't the plush house. I think we lived in up at Farley. That's where I got started. And that's why I'm in the Farley Legion. But we lived up there for 4 years. We rented a house
in Farley.
Well, right across the highway where Ralph Wegman had that farm. We lived in that old farmhouse there. And I remember, you know, I was working second shift, so John says I'd lay in bed and listen to the mice running across the ceiling. It was one of these houses that when the wind blew from the west, you sat in the east room to catch it coming through. But it was you put up with it until you had something better.
I bought, before I was married, I bought Wayne Drexler's parents' home in the west end of town there.
Okay.
And so it was an old farmhouse. So we got married, and it went along pretty good. But I have a vivid memory of maybe it was the early 80s. There was a tremendous cold snap, and I was smoking back then, and I was sitting in my chair, and the smoke was cold. And Susie said, find something else. I don't want to stay here.
You were doing the smoke test and you didn't even realize
that's
it.
Why we moved to Piasta.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, that's why I was thinking this morning, and I guess that was one of my advantages with my initials that blended right into Western Dubuque,
yeah.
Just like Wayne Drexler did. I have people, I always says, well, yeah, they named a school after me, WD, but anyway, but as you said, it was a good experience, a lot of great people, and I'm just glad that the district is flourishing today,
yeah.
Because our keeps, hopefully the idea, even when I was a county supervisor, bringing the kids back home, because we just talked about jobs. You know, I remember back in the 80s, there's a lot of people left Dubuque County, because there were no jobs. And, you know, over the years, especially when you're talking to parents and they're hoping to get their children to come back to Dubuque County, because just being close to their kids and grandkids. So hopefully we can educate them that they like what they've, you know, like everything, sometimes you have to leave it and realize how good it actually was, and keep bringing it.
I run into that quite a bit with kids I've had at the high school, and I'll see somebody, you know, people know me, obviously, and
right.
All of a sudden they'll say, hi, Mr. Howard, and then they'll say, well, we lived here and there, but we wanted to bring our kids, our family back here to go to school, you know, and be here. So it says a lot.
Well, that, and I remember, you know, coached baseball, you know, when the boys played, and I had some young guys that I had run into once in a while, and I know they ended up near Chicago. And I said to them, well, how do you like it? And they says, yeah, you get used to it. But they said, you know, I can't come back, you know, with jobs, and his wife maybe was there, but he says, I'd give anything to come back to this area and live. You know, maybe someday some of them will, once the kids leave home. There's, and with the jobs today, you know, that's bad enough then was you had a good paying job, you couldn't find one. Where now today you might be able to move to a different area and still, and we're fortunate. The cost of living still in this area.
Yeah.
My sister's out east thinking, my God, what it cost to live out there. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, listen.
Yeah.
Thanks, Wayne, for your time.
Well, this was easy. I was just like talking. The only thing is, I don't know what you're going to get out of the tape.